We are now recording the audio. It will go up on the website along with the deck and the contents of the chat window later on tonight. We have quite a bit of material to cover today, so I will kick it over to Alan to start us off and lead us through the deck. Alan, it's all yours.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Yeah, we've got lots of material, but interestingly enough, we have no prepared questions. Everything we have so far are shares. So if you have any questions, bring it up later on, I guess. First of all, a couple of reminders. The board is looking for...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Let me mute all with the ability to unmute yourself. If you do unmute yourself to ask a question or make a comment, please remute yourself afterwards so you have less background noise. Back to you, Alan.
Okay. So as I say, the board is still looking for ideas about topics and speakers. And certainly if you want to give a presentation at either a full monthly meeting or a member's favorites coming up in September, or just a share like you're going to hear tonight at the Q&A, we'd love to hear from you. And one of the topics that did come in was this one, member wanting to know everything there is to know about USB connections. And so if you have any interest in making that kind of a presentation, again, we'd be happy to hear about it. And here's a whole bunch of USB ports, and you've probably seen gray ones and black ones and blue ones, but if you know what yellow ones and red ones are, then you're probably the person who should be making this presentation. So I'll let you think about that. And the other item Chris brought up last week, I think, was Linda's idea for interesting technology-type stuff or fun games or anything that is kind of computer-related and might be of interest to the group. And basically putting together a short list of topics and links for the newsletter each month. And... my ideas, a couple of sites I saw today, actually, recently, in fact, about half an hour ago, FCC is cracking down on robocalls using the Stir-Shaken protocol, which, of course, I know absolutely nothing about. And FCC is, of course, the Americans, so it's not necessarily a Canadian initiative, although I guess we would probably benefit from it if it were to come to pass. And the other thing I saw recently was that Linux is flying on Mars. So Linux has got something to do with the Mars helicopter. So if anybody's interested in following up on those two items or following up on Linda's suggestion in general, you know where how to contact us. Anyway, on to our first set of shares. And the first one is from Chris.
This was kind of a neat thing that I ran across. It's over an hour long, but I found it quite fascinating. It's a video on YouTube, and it's all about the 1969 Apollo guidance computer. So we've all heard about how your average smartphone is, you know, 10 times or 100 times more powerful than the computers on the Apollo. And it's actually a very, very interesting talk. The hardware was actually designed by MIT Instrumentation Laboratory, and it took care of pretty much all of the guidance, navigation, and control. They actually had two, one which is, I believe, still on the moon. And it was 32 kilograms, each of them. Used 55 watts of power, about a cubic foot, and it had the blinding speed of 50,000 to 100,000 instructions per second. It ran on a system of input-output numbers, and so there was a verb and a noun, and apparently every Apollo astronaut knew that verb 99, noun 63, said, "Are you sure you want to land on the moon?" It was basically the last set of instructions about to kick in to finalize the descent onto the moon. It had 2 kilowords of RAM and 36 kilowords of ROM. And so there's the YouTube video is there, the link for it. A little bit of other information on it here. they were, of course, concerned about failures. And so they said all software basically will contain failures, and failures in production are often transient, so they can't always pick up every one of them. And in terms of 1969 Apollo landing, they actually did have failures that were not picked up in testing. So they said failed software can't be trusted to recover itself, and you have to be able to restart the system in the event of a failure. There was what was known as three nail-biting seconds on the descent down to the moon. And there were five program alarms that came up that caused restarts of parts of the system. They didn't restart the entire computer, but they restarted processes within it, or I think they called them jobs. The last one was just 2,000 feet above the moon's surface, so really getting down to the last little bit. And this was in the deck of the person who gave this presentation. This is what we would see today, you know, error code 1202. Your Apollo guidance computer ran into a problem and needs to restart. Or you'd have Clippy going error 1202. It looks like you're trying to land on the moon. Would you like help? it's a fascinating talk. Anybody who's interested in early computing or the Apollo program or things like that, I think you'll get a kick out of watching that presentation.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. The actual computer on the lunar module had less power than the average programmable calculator today. And back at NASA, all the rooms and rooms and rooms full of mainframe computers had less computing power than 20 of the old 486 computers.
Interestingly, though, the guy who gave this presentation, he took issue with this idea of, you know, today's computers are so much more powerful and things like that. He said the sophistication of this particular guidance computer was actually pretty astounding, and the ability that they really built into it, what was required for this, including that ability to deal with five program alarms that actually caused restarts and still managed to do a successful landing on the moon. And apparently it wasn't as reported by the press that Neil Armstrong wrestled control from the computer and managed to land, when there were computer problems. No, the computer worked properly. It restarted properly, and it was actually doing what it was designed to do, and it was actually quite sophisticated what that computer actually did. It's a very interesting presentation the guy put on.
Yeah, one of the reasons for that is the computers they were using, especially the one on the lunar module, was written in assembly language, which is very, very efficient at its use of computer resources. And one of the reasons now our software takes megabytes and gigabytes of power is because it's the software is very inefficiently written.
Yeah.
So
that's what happens when you give programmers hardware. They feel a need to fill it up.
Yeah.
Okay, the next couple are yours too, Chris.
Okay. This one I came across, I just thought it was interesting. I don't know the details on this really, but there's a lot of talk about how Facebook follows you around the web and things like that. Well, Graham Cluley, he puts out a Smashing Security webcast once a week. It's all about security, and he's quite an entertaining guy. And so he had on his blog about how much Facebook stalks you on the internet and some of the things that you can actually do about it. So I don't have a lot to say about it. If you're interested in that, the link is there. I put it into the chat, and fill your boots. Okay, last week during Q&A, I put in a link to Kevin Stratvert's Microsoft PowerPoint tips. Well, he also has one on Word tips, and I thought it was quite interesting. There are a few things in there that I thought were really useless, like dark mode. Does anybody really need dark mode? But at any rate, some of the things I didn't actually know could be done. And one of the things that I found to be really cool, I bolded in the top right-hand corner of the table, convert a PDF to editable Word document. So if you have something that is basically an image of a, you know, a document or whatever that has words on it, you can actually convert that using Word so that it converts the, basically does text recognition on it, and it will convert it into editable text, which is kind of neat. So a lot of other things in there that may be of interest to some people, but very quick video to go through. Kevin Stafford, he fires it off at rapid speed, so you can pause it and contemplate things as you go through, but very interesting guy, and I think anybody who uses Word could probably learn something.
I actually looked at the PowerPoint tips from last week, and it was a really good video. There were a couple of things I already knew, but he had some very useful ideas on how to do things. In fact, I think some of his ideas I'm using in the deck tonight.
Although
you'll never notice it. Really good stuff. Okay, we're always looking for people to give presentations, and Tom sent me a whole list of Android apps that he likes and uses. And so tonight I've picked out, I think, three apps. And Tom, if you want to unmute your microphone, I have the slides, I'll go through them.
Okay, here I am. COVID Alert, this is the federal government one, and I believe it uses the Apple Google thing, which basically it uses Bluetooth to connect with to see if anybody else has had COVID near you and it has a history and so on. I use it. I haven't had any hits, which is good. And I haven't had to inform the people that I've had that I have COVID, so or any exposure. So that's good, and I recommend it to everyone who is has a smartphone, just to protect yourself, and also if you do get COVID or have an exposure, to protect others as well.
Okay. Yeah. Just because Tom raised the COVID Alert app issue, and it turns out Bob Walker has some information for us later on vaccination. So that's kind of the second way to attack the COVID problem. So we'll come to Bob's slides later on. Anyway, on with Tom's favorites.
This is the CBC Listen app, and you can listen to a variety, well, almost every radio station, every CBC radio station in Canada by choosing it. You can also, they have a variety of playlists of different things, Baroque music, classical, yeah, there you are, Hot Country, Motown and Love with the Supremes and others, gospel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, by the way, most of this is only accessible, except for the news and probably the radio stations, is only accessible in Canada. All these playlists are geo-fenced, and you need to have your GPS working in your phone, or at least faked, showing your that you're in Canada. But the radio stations and the news and so on are all available around the world if you ever get to be traveling again. Atomic Clock. This is something I use, oh, I don't know, probably every several days. Basically, I have a watch. Let me, can you switch to the... My view. I have an analog watch here, and I use it for adjusting my analog watch, which is actually that the Russian diver's watch. And basically, Atomic Clock, you can use it for accurate time. I use it with, there are some local, you know, Stratum 1, Stratum 2 time servers in Ottawa, which is run by the NRC. And you can look at the status there. GPS time is also accurate within several milliseconds. The Atomic Clock app has the you can choose which time server you want, and the closer the time server is to you, the more accurate the time is, because it has less delay. Now, the network time protocol has been around for, I don't know, 40 years or so, 35 years anyway. And it basically measures the delays in any propagation over the internet, and then it tries to make up for it. But you can get time quite accurately within 10 or 20 milliseconds over the internet. And if you have a network, you can actually set up one of your computers or tablets as a network time server to the rest of your network, and have them all synchronized within probably a millisecond or two. It's useful. So, sink or swim. Computer clocks drift. I have my computer updating every hour, I think, which is probably overkill, but it keeps it accurate within a second or two. And here's how you keep your computer and other devices accurate. GPS, of course, is very accurate. The National Research Council, I've known this phone number for decades, and it's still there. If you dial 613-745-1576, it will give you the time very, very accurately by voice. So if you ever wanted to know the exact time, that's the number to call, and it's a local number. You can also listen to it on shortwave. The U.S. also has a similar time thing. Has a similar time broadcast, and it tells you the time, and it has various beeps and so on, and it's accurate within a millisecond or two, plus the delays getting it to you. But there's also the network time protocol the NRC supplies, and there are many other sources. Next. So network time protocol runs over, it's a client server protocol. It runs over port 123. Pretty simple, huh? But in case you have to open that up through your firewall, it measures and it compensates for any transmission delays. And it has it's quite accurate, and it can compare multiple sources for the best accuracy. In Ottawa, the addresses are time.nrc.ca, etc. But Google has different time servers you can use, and there's also this pool. Oh, it's 5 minutes before sunset, sorry. If you look outside, 5 minutes later, the sun will go down in Ottawa. There's also this pool.ntp.org that also allows you to get network time accurately. Windows NTP, this is how you set up your Windows. You can do it with a command line, which is w32tm, blah, 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 blah. And this is using the pools. And it's done in your control panel. If you look at the bottom right, clock and region, that's what you open up. And you choose the date and time, and then there's internet time settings. As you can see, it's one of the tabs on date and time. And you can synchronize with an internet time server, and again, the more accurate, the closer it is to you, the more accurate your time will be if you care about it, I suppose. And if you're retired, you know, who cares about a second or two? This is the atomic clock, and it does have an ad. I think you can probably pay to get rid of the ad if you don't want to feel her loss. But if you notice down at the bottom, it says system clock. That's the network time that's supplied by my my, what do you call it, my cell phone provider, which is actually Rogers, and it's currently about 1.3 seconds off. It's actually 1.3 seconds behind. It's a minus 1.3. So the network time you get from your provider is usually accurate within a couple of seconds, if that's all you care about. But you want real accuracy. Oh, by the way, that clock says 01:33:57.0. You can actually specify that if you want two or three or four decimal places for the seconds. But given that it's only displayed to you, it doesn't do much to improve any accuracy if you go under a tenth of a second. You can also get accurate time from GPS. And there are a lot of GPS apps, and they will, almost all of them will tell you the time. And here it's 2:19:36 a.m. GMT minus 4, because, of course, I think that's the – I don't know whether that takes into account daylight savings time or not.
That would be daylight saving. Without that, standard time is 5 hours off of GMT, so that's with daylight saving.
And, of course, you can do other things with GPS times because it knows where you are. It knows the sunset and sunrise time, although this particular app doesn't give you a sunrise or sunset time alarm, which is what just pinged off. So this is what I use to when I want to set my my watch, my analog watch to that. Oh, by the way, I also have a smart watch, which, of course, keeps time within the system time of my internet provider, my cell phone provider that it's connected to. But so I don't have to adjust that. But my analog watch, I do adjust. And currently, it's about 10 seconds fast. Let's see, it's currently 19:54:18, and no, it looks like about 20 seconds fast. So, next.
That's it. You're done.
I'm done. Anyway,
you're done.
You can keep accurate time, and it is kind of a luxury to be within a second or two. But I recall one time when I was at a TV station in the market. I guess it was City TV, and I had my watch, quite accurately timed. And I said, why your program seems to be about 4 seconds late?" And they said, "Huh?" and because apparently most people don't keep their watches accurate within a second or two. I don't know why.
It's probably worth noting as well, though, that Windows will use NTP on its own. If you don't set an NTP server, it will use time.windows.com. So they actually do use, by default, an NTP server.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Tom. That was really good, and I'll dig into the list for next week and see what else there is, I think. Okay, so B, you're next up if you have sound and
want to try
sharing your screen.
Yeah, just a second. Make co-host. Okay, B, you are now co-host, so you could share your screen if your PowerPoint is working.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
All right, well, let's see if this works. This will stop other screen. That's okay. Here we go. Let's try this. If I conk out, I apologize.
We see your PowerPoint.
Working?
Yep.
All right. So actually, Linda and I and the fitness group that I'm working with, we tried a whole bunch of things, and we were going to try using a mic and stuff. And in the end, we found something which was quite simple. So I just thought we would mention this. I'm on the last slide, and I don't need to be. I want to be on the first slide, and I want to play it, don't I?
Yep.
Okay. Let's see. I haven't done this for a long time.
There you go.
There we go. How's that?
Is it showing up? There we go. Oh, where you're in presenter view. That's okay. Carry on.
I'm sorry. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, okay. I just carry on.
All right. So, simple solution. A little bit different for the host and the participants. A lot of the participants are on a tablet, so they don't have all the same settings. So we want to keep it simple. For the host, we used all the things that you suggested in that previous presentation you did on Zoom. And Linda mentioned turning off the HD video, which we don't really need because we don't really need to see each other's wrinkles. And so that gives us a better chance of keeping our bandwidth okay. And in the audio settings, the most important thing is that you go into the audio settings and set your speaker and your mic to max, both the presenters, so that's for the host, and enable show meeting option to turn off original sound. So you don't want the... you want the original sound on. You don't want all the fancy maskings because that tends to mask the music, which is the most important part. And then by default, one day when my iPod collapsed, I tried sharing music from the computer, and that actually seemed to be to work really well. So I'm going to show you how to do that. For the participants, it's pretty much the same. They need to turn the volume on their computer up to the max so that they'll get the music and the voice. If they can see it on their device, turn on original sound. The other thing is one day somebody said to me, you were so small today, I couldn't see what you were doing. So you have to remind them to use gallery view for chatting, but to use speaker view when we're teaching. And turn off the HD video. They can't all do that, but now how do I go to the next slide? Yeah, so turning off the HD video, these are the instructions. You just go into the video up arrow and unclick the box that says enable HD. So that's pretty pretty simple. And then in the audio settings, both the mic and the speaker, you need to pull the little thing over to the Mac, and it doesn't seem to be set up originally in the mic. Sometimes your computer controls the speaker, but not the mic. So the host has to be sure to get that mic right up as loud as it'll go. And then there's the option to show the option to turn on original sound, so we want that. And then I'm talking really fast here, but I think the most important thing we discovered is how to use the sound from the computer. So I use iTunes, and I just play iTunes, and you go to share and you go to advanced, click on advanced, and it gives you the option for music or computer sound. Share that, and then you'll come up with the green thing at the top that says you're sharing computer sound, and you can see the little thing that says turn off original sound, and which, if you're seeing that, means original sound is on, which is what you want. And of course you guys all know, but sometimes the new participants don't know where to go to get the gallery view, the speaker view would be big. And I have to remember to mute all before we get started. But first we do a sound check, because the other thing is that when you're putting your sound together in iTunes, there's a few things that it helps to pay attention to. One is that different music has different sounds. So if you, I get music from a commercial source, which has, you know, fitness music, and it tends to be quite loud, which is a good thing. But then when you go to something else that you've maybe taken off a CD or bought from iTunes, it might not have the same, it'd be as loud. So try to group them together so that you only have to adjust your sound between the main groups, not after every tune. And I have been taking some stuff off YouTube because we've been doing themed classes. So that can be really variable, and you have to check it against something that you already have. I think it's fairly obvious, but just to mention, it's better to use instrumental music when you need people to be able to hear your directions. And you have to speak quite loudly if you're standing back far enough for them to see you doing the whole exercise. So if you want to speak in a sort of normal voice, say for the relaxation at the end, then you just have to come up close to your mic and just speak right into your mic if you want to use a regular voice. And I have YouTube's, I have my Zoom set up so that it's not filling the whole screen, and iTunes is just peeking out the top so that I can play with it. I can adjust the sound, or I can skip a tune. It would be a lot easier if I had two monitors. I did try that, but it was going to the wrong side, and it was just too much to remember while you're trying to remember all the things about the class. So I'm sure I can iron that out in the future. So that would be quite useful if you could have your iTunes on one screen and your people on the other screen, because it's really important that you can see the people. So that's it. And if anybody has any questions, it all turned out to be very simple. Until my Zoom decided to die on Tuesday, it's been working quite well. So I don't know what's wrong with my Zoom. I can't seem to get all the components working at the same time. As you can see, you can't see me. But I'll work that out, I guess.
As a first troubleshoot on Zoom, what I would do is just download and install the latest client from zoom.us and see if it magically fixes things.
Okay. Well, I have Pro, so would it be, is that the...
Still the same client.
Okay, yeah. Same. All right, I'll try that. It did ask me to update earlier this evening, and I did that, and I rebooted, and I was hoping that would be all I needed to do, but it didn't fix it. Okay, so I'll just go and download the latest one and just reinstall.
Well, of course, if they ask you to update just today, they're not going to have a newer client out than that. So, okay. They do frequently come out with new updates, but certainly not every day coming out with multiple updates.
Hey, I like that. That's a cool picture. I wish we all looked like that, right, Linda? Oh, well. Okay, well, thank you very much for letting me I thought, Chris, you would like it because it's a very simple solution. And
yeah, that's great.
Didn't cost any money at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it can be applicable to all kinds of things where people really need to be able to see participants and hear them, and they can hear and so forth. And you're not always sitting right in front of the computer where your microphone necessarily is. So I think this could be applicable for a lot of people. So that's great. Thank you very much.
Yes. Oh, and thanks for the suggestion about Audacity. I actually did download that, and I've used it to cut things. But yes, I'm going to investigate using it to equalize the sound. That's a really good idea, and it's fun to play with. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Bea. And now it's Bob Walker's turn. So, Bob, you'll have to unmute yourself.
COVID vaccination.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. Can you make me host again there, Chris?
You disappeared and came back, I guess. Right?
Yeah. Wonders of rural high speed.
Okay, you got it.
Okay. Okay, so let me bring up the deck here, and
okay. There we go.
So over the last little while, I've booked COVID vaccination appointments for a few people, including myself, and it was quite a bewildering mess of stuff. The information from the various government sources, the ducks didn't really line up with each other. A lot of confusing information. So I put together this deck to maybe help some of the other people get along on this. There's an awful lot of information available at the Ottawa Public Health website, including how to book appointments and that. And for those people that don't live in the city of Ottawa proper, which includes the vast rural city of Ottawa, there's also information available on the internet from for the other four districts around Ottawa. Now, the information I'm giving is for average people. There are several people with special considerations, and the list is here, and I'm not going to go through it all, but it includes people at high risk, people that work in retirement homes, faith leaders, Aboriginal folks, and so several other categories. And you get more information on that from the Ottawa Public Health website. Now, if you're 60 or older in sometime in 2021, or you're otherwise eligible according to the list I just showed, and you have an Ontario health card, you can book a shot at the web address I've given there. Now, if you go through this site, this is the Ontario booking site, and you're going to be booking specific to the Ottawa area, but your appointment may be up to 3 weeks away or even longer. If you book through the site, you'll likely be booked at one of the following places, and there's a list there. Now, this list changes quite a bit, and when I booked appointments for other people, there were only four sites on the website, and now there's eight, and there's more being added. You notice one of these is actually noted as opening soon, so it's not even open yet. If you book through the website, you'll be offered either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine. Now, if you're 60 or older in 2021 or otherwise eligible and you don't have an Ontario health card, you can also book at this phone number. And I had to use this. My brother-in-law came to visit us for the summer from Alberta, and he got here about a week before the original shutdown a year ago. And he's been here ever since because it's hard for him to get back home. And because he had an Alberta health card, I had to book his appointment through this number. And I also booked my wife Cindy's appointment because they both turned, they're both over 70. And the day that the over 70s became eligible, I went to book their appointment. Now, if you book through this number, besides the previously mentioned clinic sites, the operators are also able to book appointments at several temporary clinics and these locations may be a lot closer to you, especially if you live in rural Ottawa. That said, the operators aren't necessarily familiar with the Ottawa area, and so you may have to do a little bit back and forth with them to find out which of these sites may be closer to you. But some of these sites, you can get an appointment within a day or two. If you're lucky, if they're at the right time. My wife, Cindy, and her brother became eligible on the Monday, and that's when I booked the their shots. And they ended up getting an appointment on the Wednesday afternoon. And the site was at the Richmond Arena, which only operates once a week for shots. And it was a 15-minute drive away as opposed to a half-hour drive away at the PN Sportsplex. So the actual website on and off may have some information on these temporary clinic sites, but not always. And again, the vaccines offered are the Pfizer or the Moderna. Now, if you go to book through this phone number and you have to go through voicemail hell, press 1 if and press 3 if, yada, 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 before you actually get to talk to a person. And the voicemail may ask you if you have a valid Ontario health card. And if you answer yes, it may bounce you to the website. So keep that in mind. Now, recently, if you're 40 or older in 2021 and otherwise eligible, and you have a valid Ontario health card or other form of valid government-issued identification, which includes driver's license, passport, a number of other things, you can book a shot at a local pharmacy. And for more information, you can go to the site that's mentioned there. Now, basically all this site is a listing of vaccine locations. And it only includes a list of some of the participating pharmacies. When it gets down to it, you'll end up booking the site or booking your appointment with the pharmacy itself, either through their website or by phone. If you look for pharmacy locations by city, there's a vast list of municipalities involved. And besides the listing for Ottawa, some of the neighborhoods in Ottawa are also listed separately, which will give you different results. For example, Nepean and Manotick are in the list, as well as the city of Ottawa. Through the site, you can also look for pharmacies by postal code. But when I did that with my postal code, which is in the southwest corner of the city of Ottawa near Merrickville, I was referred to pharmacies in Perth, Smith Falls, Arnprior, and Brockville, and none that were close to me, like in Merrickville or Kempville. So keep that in mind. Now, this list is not necessarily complete. If you have pharmacies close to you that you regularly do business with or are just close to you, go to their website or phone them up and see if they're offering the vaccines. And register however they tell you. Now, you might want to register with several pharmacies and whatever, because to a large extent, when you register on their websites or on the phone, they're basically taking your name and putting it on a waiting list, not necessarily allowing you to book the appointment right then and there. At some point in time, they'll either phone you up or email you saying, we now have appointments available, and you can book the appointment at that time. So you might want to register with several pharmacies, and the first one that contacts you with saying there's available appointments, go with that one. Now, their appointments are subject to the availability of vaccines, and the supply of the vaccines to the pharmacies isn't quite as regular as a supply to the public health sites. And as well as the pharmacies, some of the doctor's offices also have vaccines available, but the doctors are supposed to offer those first to their patients with the underlying medical problems that have a priority in the vaccine availability listing. Now, if you're booking through the pharmacies or the doctor's offices, the vaccine that's available is the AstraZeneca vaccine. Yeah, we'll cover that a little bit in a few minutes or a few seconds. Okay. All of the vaccines are 75 to 95% effective at totally preventing you from getting a COVID infection. Okay. And all of them are 100% effective at preventing a serious infection that will result in hospitalization or death. So there's, you know, real serious benefits to getting the vaccines. Now, depending on your age, physical condition, any other medical issues, et cetera, it'll take between 1 to 4 weeks after you get the vaccine for the shot to become fully effective. So, it's, you know, you don't, on your way home from getting the shot, don't go visit your grandmother and give her a big hug. Now, once you have the vaccine and it becomes fully effective, you can still be a COVID carrier for up to 2 weeks after you get exposed to COVID. So because of this, you have to continue with masking, social distancing, the other measures to protect others around you who may not have been vaccinated yet. Okay? The masks protect others around you more than it protects you yourself. Now, there's been a lot of publicity about blood clots with the AstraZeneca vaccine. And the AstraZeneca vaccine has a similar technology to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which will be available in Canada shortly. Now, the chances of getting blood clots are between 1 in 100,000 and 1 in a million, depending on the person's age, sex, medical conditions, et cetera. Those are pretty long odds. In comparison, a woman on the pill has a better than 1 in 2,000 chance of getting blood clots. So that shows a whole major factor there of difference. Now, blood clots are normally quite treatable and are rarely fatal. Okay, so even if you're the 1 in a million that gets blood clots as a result of the vaccine shot, you'll probably survive it no problem at all. And one of the problems in studying the effects of the vaccine on blood clots is it's such a rare thing that it's very difficult to actually study. And it's basically thought that your chance of getting a blood clot with the vaccine are about the same as getting a blood clot anyway. And it's thought that if anything, the vaccine just triggers a pre-existing condition. So you have to take that for what it's worth. The basic thing is you're better off to take whatever vaccine you can get in your arm first to protect you and protect the people around you. Okay. Now, some of the bookings through the public health and through the pharmacies include a booking for your second shot. And these second shot bookings are sort of in the August time frame, so that's quite a ways down the road. These second shot bookings are very tentative, and they're highly dependent on a regular supply of the vaccine between now and then. So these bookings may or may not be either moved up or canceled, depending on how things go. If you've already had your first shot without a second shot booking, or if you don't get a second shot booking with your first shot booking, bookings for the second shot alone won't be available until they're announced by the public health folks. So that's about it. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes, one question. Have you looked into going over the border to Gatineau and getting a shot?
Not really, because, like I said, as soon as my wife and my brother-in-law became eligible. I was able to get them a booking within 2 days. Once I became eligible, because I'm younger than they are, I was able to get a booking within a week. And I'm in the far, far southwest corner of the rural city of Ottawa, and Quebec's a long ways away from me. It's not like I live downtown or anything, and it's a quick drive, so I haven't really looked into that. And the specifics are probably more available on the Gatineau Public Health website, which is listed earlier in this presentation. So I haven't really considered that. So I do get my wife's a retired Air Canada employee. I maybe could have flown down to Florida and got a shot down there. Okay, let me.
Does it hit here? One thing to point out is that no testing was done on immunocompromised people. So this is the category I'm falling in. So some people may or may not want, some of them may or may not want to go and have their shots. My doctor advised me to go, but I'm personally I'm reluctant too because I don't know what the consequences are going to be with my system.
Yeah.
My wife did get her shot last week. She was told to get Moderna, and they were keeping Pfizer for older people. She's 60 now, so I don't know why again. But that's
yeah. Before I retired, I was a senior IT project manager at the Public Health Agency of Canada, and one of the systems I looked after from an IT standpoint was the vaccine-associated adverse events application. And vaccines that are approved in Canada are generally very, very safe. But that said, you know, if you have issues, you need to talk to your healthcare professional. My wife and my brother-in-law both have health issues, and in talking to their own personal physicians, they were told, because of these issues, you need to get the shot. So it's an iffy issue because the safety testing for the COVID vaccines, normally the testing cycle or the for approvals takes quite a long time, and things are done in one thing after the other, all consecutively. Because of the desperate need to get a working vaccine for COVID, some of the test cycles were shortened down, not in a way that makes it more risky, but shortened down just to get them out there quicker. And a lot of the testing was done in parallel. For example, normally you do the testing on the 18 to 50 age group of healthy people first, and then you would do older people and younger people, and then you would do people with medical issues. What was happening, as soon as the 18 to 50 testing started to show good results, they started the testing on some of the other groups. Normally, you know, the testing is complete, and then the company submits the results to the regulatory authorities. In this case, as they were submitting the results as they went along, so by the time the testing was done, the regulatory authorities had all the information they need to make a decision. So that shortcutting has left some of the testing up in the air, and as a result, there's a lot of real world data coming in from Europe and Asia on the safety and the efficacy and everything else. And in particular, Pfizer made a deal with Israel, because Israel has a relatively small population and very compact. they gave them vaccines for the whole country early on, and the deal was that Israel had to submit very, very detailed results information, and so a lot of the later approvals were based on the Israeli and other European data. So, yeah, if you have health issues, talk to your doctor, but in a lot of cases, they might recommend that you get the vaccine specifically because you have the issues.
Right. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Bob. Yeah, we are coming down to the wire of the 1 hour, but I will just comment that there's a lot of information that is in the chat. Remind people that if you want to capture the chat on your local computer, you can click the three dots at the bottom, and then you'll have the option to save the chat to text file on your computer. Just comment that some of the things that we have in the chat tonight, we do have some people inputting to the color of tabs on USB ports. We had a comment on dark mode saving battery life on OLED screens. So that was in one of the word tips. We have some information about open sourcing of the Ingenuity software on Mars. We have information about normalizing tracks of sound using FUBAR or using Audacity. And we have a little bit more information some people posted in about the COVID shots. So if you want information on any of those, check out the chat windows. And I guess let's go through our last slides there, Alan.
And just, yeah, I know you mentioned that the chat window, the PowerPoint deck, the audio file are all posted on the website later on. So
yeah,
those are available for reference. Okay, handsome gentleman will be the guest speaker, the speaker at our next regular meeting, which will be the 12th of May. And Chris has found out all there is to know about typography, and you can see it all in that slide right there. It sounds like a really interesting presentation.
It'll be a fun evening.
And if you're concerned about passwords, then Tech Cafe starts up in June, and Lawrence will be talking about password phrasing. And our next meeting will be next week, the 28th. And as usual, if you have questions or you can answer any of the topics that are posted a few days ahead of time, or things that you want to share, like all of the things you've seen tonight, and just send us a note to the suggestion box, and we'll be happy to accommodate you. So thanks very much, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it. And thanks to all the presenters.
Yes, thanks very much, folks.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, it works. I was afraid to... click it until the very end. I don't know. There's gremlins.
It's the demo gods.
Yeah. The demo gods. Yeah, I've done my demo now. Everything will be okay. Thank you, guys. You're magic.
Thanks a lot, B. That was a great presentation.
Bye.
Very good. Night, gentlemen.
Bye. Bye.